A priest. In 1940, it was not unusual for some Jesuit priests to carry a double workload in their jobs and various duties, especially for those teaching in high schools. The Jesuit founder, Saint Ignatius, wrote a prayer for generosity. So Jesuits prayed, "Lord, teach me to be generous, to give and not to count the cost." Many young Jesuits lived this prayer in their everyday life. Joe celebrated daily Mass at school and Sunday Masses in parishes, along with preaching and performing baptisms. During the year, he performed marriages, funeral Masses, and burials where necessary. He brought the sacrament of the sick to the ill and the dying whenever a request was made. These priestly functions were just part of Joe's schedule as he began his Loyola High School teaching and coaching assignment in 1948. From his years spent studying classical literature, as well as philosophy and theology conducted in Latin, Joe was well prepared to teach religion, Latin, mathematics, speech, or any other subject. After the school day, Joe enjoyed coaching on the football field or the track oval. The organization of large numbers of athletes, daily practices, and game and meet preparations are just a few of a football or track coach's responsibilities. At the same time, individualized athletic skills are trained to perfection. In coaching football and track at Loyola High School, Joe learned from his professional friends, such as Loyola's outstanding varsity football coach, Jack Bouchard, who died of leukemia at age of 31. He gave Joe his most successful plays. Jordan Oliver, who coached football at Loyola University and later at Yale, also gave Joe binders of offensive and defensive football patterns. Plays are important, but good athletes to execute the plays are a prime requisite for a winning team. Joe was also blessed with good talent. Al Pollard, a future All-American high school player, played on Joe's Catholic League Junior Varsity Championship football team. Later, playing on the school's varsity team, Al became a Loyola legend, bringing the Southern California Championship to the school and its first place national rating. Al then played football for West Point, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Canadian Professional Football League. John Wayne's son, Mike, played tackle on Joe's team, along with other strong competitive athletes, such as Nick Steele. Contact with high-quality young stars like these added to the joy of coaching. Wally Stoltz, a 440 and 880 track athlete, received the school's permission to begin a track team, but he had to recruit a faculty member to coach. Wally asked Joe to coach Loyola's first track team, but Joe excused himself, saying he did not know much about track. Wally told Joe that the team would teach him. Joe increased his knowledge of track, getting help from professional track coaches. Bud Winter, coach of San Jose State and known for his Olympic track stars, passed on to Joe his techniques in sprints and relays. Ed Bowerman of Oregon and world-renowned distance coach Percy Trudy wrote to Joe suggesting ways to develop his runners. Joe mastered the knowledge for high jumping, long jumping, and pole vaulting and excelled in his grasp of the shot and discus events. Wally Stoltz remembered that Joe's team won the Catholic League championship and that his sprinters, relay teams, and hurdlers never lost a race in 3 years. These sports memories have been mentioned to indicate how Joe enjoyed being a priest, a teacher, and a coach as well. Joe realized that those who participated in a sport received more than just the fun of competition. Joe felt that winning gave the athletes a pride in themselves and in their school. Along with studies and religious life, they would strive for excellence in all things in the spirit of Christ's recommendation, to be perfect as your heavenly Father. For Joe, character formation was important in everyone's life. He thought that the discipline of sports helped in this formation with its self-control, working toward goals, competition with integrity and sportsmanship, and rules. These values, applied to life, form a foundation for every religious and for family life. Joe noticed how students' participation in sports gave them a positive attitude to life, in contrast to problem students who were not engaged in healthy pursuits. In 1953, Friar Frank Harrington, Loyola's rector, asked Joe to join him in reopening the Jesuit Brophy High School in Phoenix, Arizona, which had closed its doors in 1929. The two fathers reopened Brophy, beginning with one freshman class. Each year, they added another class until they had a regular four-year high school. Along with teaching, Joe did a good deal of physical work to improve the football and track areas. One day, for a break, Joe and Friar Harrington drove to Arizona's famous Grand Canyon. They hiked to the bottom of the canyon, and Friar Harrington would never forget his experience. Friar Harrington told Joe's brother Ray his on-the-trail story. He described how he and Joe walked more than a few miles to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. After a rest and refreshment, Frank's leg muscles cramped, and he felt very tired. He asked Joe to go to the top and find a donkey to carry him out of the canyon. Reaching the top of the canyon, Joe searched to rent a donkey, but the animals were either unavailable or too expensive to rent. Joe returned to the bottom and informed Frank that no assistance could be found. He told Frank that he would carry him to the top. They could rest along the way. In Frank's own words, "Joe literally carried me to the top of the canyon. Otherwise, I would not have made it. I don't know how he did it, but he did." In 1960, Joe's provincial moved Friar Joe to Bellarmine High School in San Jose to be a teacher, chaplain, and track and cross-country coach. Joe probably did not appreciate the move as he had enjoyed Brophy in the Western Desert. Arriving at Bellarmine, Joe put in a new oval cement curbing on the inside and outside of the track and surfaced the track with cinders. A cyclone fence separated the railroad track from Joe's running track. Sometimes transients or hobos came to Joe while he was working on the track and asked for a handout. Joe had them sit down while he left his work and went to the Jesuit kitchen and prepared sandwiches, fruit, and coffee for them. To help these homeless people, while recognizing that their lifestyle was their choice, Joe wished he could develop a place with temporary lodgings or barracks somewhere along the railroad tracks. With such a facility, the transients, for a 1 or 2 day stay, could stop, eat and sleep, get new clothes, take a shower, or get a haircut. With this humanitarian boost and religious lift, they might find a new start in life or at least be encouraged by knowing that someone took an interest in them. Winning a championship is an exhilarating experience for a team and its coach, the ultimate reward for a team's hard work and intensity in competition. Joe's Bellarmine track team won the Catholic League championship, while his discus thrower, Bruce Nagley, won the California State Discus Championship for 2 successive years. Once, in a dual meet, Joe's track team competed with Berkeley High School, considered one of the best teams in Northern California. The final score ended in a dead heat. At the El Cerrito Relays, Joe's 2-mile relay team won the gold medal. Joe conducted his own 50-school invitational track and field meet, a great success and a tribute to the Bellarmine coach. In winning, Joe's athletes found a new feeling of pride in themselves and perhaps a feeling that someone upstairs liked them. In 1965, Joe's provincial asked Joe if he would consider moving to Ogden, Utah to help at St. Mary's Parish and to teach at St. Joseph's High School. The provincial stressed the need and then let Joe decide. After Joe agreed, the provincial mentioned how 10 other Jesuits had refused. No one knows why the 10 refused. Perhaps it was the move from populated, attractive California to a rural Utah area in a state known for Mormon majority control. Maybe it was the long, snowy winters, which could discourage anyone with other aspirations of work and climate. At the small, co-ed St. Joseph's High School, Joe taught his subjects, coached a cross-country team, and found only one Husky student capable of track competition. His name was Fred Prussing, and he threw the discus. He went on to win the state championship for 2 successive years, and he established a new state record. During Joe's stay in Ogden, Utah, His superior was Friar Luis Kern, S.J., called Lou, the pastor at St. Mary's Church. Friar Lou was delighted when Joe, a most welcome addition to the parish and school. Friar Lou observed how Joe seemed to take world problems on his own shoulders as his personal concern. When a migrant child died of malnutrition, Joe made a public appeal to assist the migrant workers. Joe filled a freight car with potatoes, rice, pinto beans, and other commodities, which were redistributed to the migrant families. During their harvesting season, Joe provided food and clothes and looked for ways to educate the migrant children who worked in the fields. Friar Lou described Joe as Joe Martyr for others, as he did so many merciful acts, visiting the sick and the dying and helping those caught up in delinquency. Friar Lou said, "Joe Devlin is utterly unselfish, disregarding his own personal needs." And talking with his brother Ray, Joe said, "I feel bad when I visit the poor. I see how little food they have in their homes in contrast to the comfortable rectory in which I live. I feel I should do more for the ignored poor." East of Ogden are the Wasatch Mountains, and Joe enjoyed climbing them, even in winter. One winter day, Dr. Moncrief and Joe climbed the spine side of 10,000-foot, snow-covered Ben Lomond with a rope stretched between them. Another time, Joe pointed to a vertical 90-degree Ogden Canyon wall, which he told his brother he used for rock climbing practice. If Mount Everest had been near, Joe would have attempted to climb it. Off the rocky cliffs behind St. Joseph's High School, Joe taught students how to rappel safely from the heights with nylon ropes. One day, Joe, with a group of his students, set out to enjoy a picnic and swim at Pine View Lake. Arriving at the lake, they encountered a tragic situation, with a mother bemoaning the loss of her son in the lake water. Later, Joe wrote, "Found a 7-year-old in the water at the dam today, after he had been 3 or 4 minutes submerged. He was not one of ours, but Mel Martinez heard from some kids as we arrived that the boy had gone down underwater in our bay, about 6 feet deep in the water. I had everyone spread out and walk through the area. An object struck my foot. It was the boy. I pulled him out. He was lifeless, but by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation breathing, I brought him back to breathe again. I carried him to his family car, still unconscious, but breathing, and gave him to his mother. Thanks be to God." Later, the mother and son came to visit Friar Joe at St. Mary's Church to thank him for saving her son from drowning. Friar Joe Devlin later wrote, "I felt finding the boy and bringing him back to life was one of the greatest things I ever did. If I had not restored breathing, the boy would be dead. What a great blessing it was to give a son back to his mother, alive." This event occurred before Joe received the invitation that is the basis of the next chapter, but it brings out the deep conviction of Joe's heart about the value of human life given by God with the opportunity to enjoy all creation. It is perhaps an indication of why Joe called communism the greatest evil, because it destroyed so many millions of lives. It is also the reason Joe took such a courageous stand against abortion. Joe preached strongly against the destruction of human life from the first moment of conception, as indicated in one of his talks in the appendix. For Joe, all life was truly sacred. The most precious element in the universe, the greatest of all God's gifts to humanity.